Well, this week, the government formally announced details of the long-awaited inquiry into the banking crisis, which virtually brought the country to its knees in 2008. In the wake of the Anglo trial verdicts and sentencing, as well as the stunning judgment handed down by Judge Martin Nolan that the regulator had led bank executives Willie McAteer and Pat Whelan into error and illegality, the questions that a banking inquiry could pose seem more important than ever. Well, I'm joined by Minister for Jobs, Enterprise and Innovation, Richard Bruton. You're very welcome to the studio. Minister, before we just get to the banking crisis and a few other matters as well, a lot of headlines in the paper this morning about water charges and the suggestion that a coalition deal has been reached, which would see the end of the standing charge and possibly charges rising more than expected for those who don't qualify for measures. Is that the case? Has a deal been reached?
No, we would be discussing this, I'm sure, at next week's cabinet meeting. As you know, we have indicated the broad framework because this is a really important investment for the future. We need a quality water system. We've outlined the broad approach, but you know, there has been a lot of discussion to make sure we structure this in a way that's fair to different groups, to people on low incomes, to people who have high health needs. And the detail of that is being worked on, and we will make a decision in the very near future.
That might be a formal decision. I suppose it looks as if the standing charge may go. If that is the case, and the €240 charge that was put out there as a number, if it ends up being higher, that reflects very badly on the government handling of this because, you know, already the papers are talking about the price going up and on charges that haven't even been introduced yet.
No, the indicative charge of 240 is what an average family would pay. So that isn't changing. Obviously, there's discussions about the structure of the charge. And like any bill, you can structure it in different ways, either with standing charges, with a lower usage per usage, if you like, fee, or other ways. But it doesn't change the overall average amount of revenue that has to be raised. So it still remains that the average bill would be around the 240.
Okay, well, just looking at the whole banking situation, and I'm sure, like everybody else, you followed the Anglo-Irish Bank trial recently. What did you make of Patrick Neary's evidence in that case and what it might say about how the banking inquiry will perform?
Well, look, I'm not going to comment on a court case. I mean,
although it is over,
it may yet be appealed, and indeed we have still to see the sentence. But I think the bigger picture is people want to see the truth of what happened. How did policy fail? How did processes fail that were supposed to be there to protect us? I mean, I remember way back in the early 2000s when the central bank bill came in, and I very clearly said we should not let this go ahead until we have road tested it, that we are up to best practice in regulation, but they wouldn't hear of such. And I think that was a mistake. I mean, we bundled together that new legislation without really looking into the system and seeing was it fit for purpose.
Well, if you look
so
at the
people will want to go back and check, you know, what went wrong? What went wrong here?
In order to find out what went wrong, it does appear as if sometime around 2003 is when the banking system really began to get overloaded on property and get out of control. The reality is that in 2015 or 2016, this inquiry will be asking regulators and former bank executives what went on at board meetings 12 years earlier. You've left it too late to do anything meaningful.
You know, but clearly there have been criminal trials, there's been huge changes, but I think people will still want to see the truth and will want to make sure that the lessons are learnt. And, you know, there's been a lot of legislative change because of the failures. The structure of the central bank is now completely different, the powers are different. But I think people will still want to see what went wrong.
But will we get it? Patrick Neary said he couldn't recall or didn't know around 30 times in his evidence. That may just be a sort of preview for a very similar situation for witness after witness.
Well, there are always challenges in any inquiry. That's true. But, the Oireachtas Committee will have the possibility of compellability. It will have other powers. It will have, obviously, access to huge amounts of documentation. So it will be able to evaluate that. I think people will want to see what are the lessons that we need to learn, because people's lives have been totally turned head over heels by this. And we need to get to the truth of this. And it's appropriate that the legislators who are responsible for long-term oversight of all of the public bodies that should be holding the system up to scrutiny, it's right that the legislature should do this inquiry and use the powers that it has and establish, you know, where the path for the future should be as a result of this appalling experience.
Will it descend into a party political bun fight? Your leader, the Taoiseach Enda Kenny, had a bit of an elbow before the throw-in there when he was talking about Fianna Fáil's errors, and it hasn't really started yet, the inquiry.
No, I think very clearly the way it's being established is that the Committee for Procedure and Privileges will have a role in ensuring that those who are on the committee aren't biased in their approach, and also that the way in which they conduct it is not open to bias. And of course, that will have to be rigorously policed. But I think there's a long experience now of committees who are given, if you like, all party roles to play, of collaborating in a very constructive way. And people will remember the Dirt Inquiry and other inquiries that have been conducted absolutely above board with pursuing the truth of what happened.
Last month, just to get to the question of income tax and possible tax cuts, last month you wrote an article on this issue where you said that, you know, the government should work towards a medium-term goal of reducing the point at which people start to pay the higher rate of tax and possibly even look at the rate itself. There's an election coming, and this week Michael Noonan emphasised that doing something on income tax was a priority for the government. Can we afford it?
I think we can, and obviously that has to be evaluated as the year goes along. But I mean, in this year, we've enjoyed the fastest employment growth anywhere in the OECD. And you know the figure, we've 61,000 extra at work. Every extra person at work is estimated to add about 20,000 to the exchequer in extra tax saved social welfare payments.
Still borrowing 150 million a week.
Yeah, but that creates, you know, that sort of growth creates an opportunity to give some people relief. And there's a lot of people hit high tax rates at very low income. And I've been saying this for over a year, that in terms of employment, this is a problem. You hear it from the boardrooms. They're worried about, if you like, the top line pressure on the cost if there isn't some relief for workers through tax relief, that the pressure will build on competitiveness. And that's something we can't afford, because we're trying to still drive an export-led recovery. So for many reasons, to take the pressure off a very hard-pressed middle ground, people hitting high rates of very low incomes, you know, there are good reasons for economic policy to prioritise this. But obviously we have to, you know, wait till next year's budget to see the capacity to do it. But I think it's a very encouraging signal from Michael Noonan.
One of the things about that, I think you have mentioned as well, that there is a challenge there in attracting, you know, big IDA, foreign direct investment projects and people to come to Ireland. And if the income tax rate is too high, that can be a deterrent. But if you start giving out some kind of tax cuts, are individuals earning 100 or 150,000 a year going to get a benefit from it as well as those who are in much greater need?
Well, I think you focus on the points of greatest need, clearly. But I think, you know, people look across a whole range of issues when deciding where to invest. But there's no doubt that this is one of them. The so-called tax wedge between what an employer pays and what a worker gets is a source of concern. And there are many others. So we have to make sure that our offering is competitive. So this is just one element. But the strong sale of Ireland now is, you know, we've built great talent. We've built clusters of deep strength in sectors. But, you know, we're always competing vigorously with Singapore, with Netherlands. There's so much competition out there. We have to make sure that we're the best we can and continually improve the offering.
You mentioned there about the number of jobs created last year, 60,000 jobs, and the unemployment rate coming down. The OECD gave a very strong backing to the government's jobs strategy in recent weeks, but it wasn't totally happy about everything. For example, one of the things they said was they want to see the government do more to help youth and other disadvantaged groups find jobs. Is there a sense that the most disadvantaged and the most vulnerable groups are actually getting left behind in this end of the recession and growth?
Well, that's a risk, clearly, and they've underlined that risk. But I think it's encouraging to see in the last 2 years, 40,000 less people are long-term unemployed. So we are bringing down the, if you like, the harder to place. That is very encouraging. And both Joan Burton and Rory Quinn have targeted programmes, you know, like Job Plus, like Momentum, the subsidy for the long-term unemployed, the training for the long-term unemployed. There are programmes there that are focused. But the OECD is rightly saying, you know, that has to be a key element of our strategy, because a lot of people were dislodged from construction. A lot of young people have never got their first opportunity. We need to make sure that no one is left behind. And that's the concept behind Pathways to Work. So we accept that we haven't done everything perfect, but I think the overall picture that the OECD Secretary General said is, you know, this is an innovative approach to policy making, and you should push on and not delay the pace of reform.
Yeah, well, they also said that JobBridge, for example, is a large and expensive programme, and it's not targeted specifically at the most disadvantaged groups. Is that something that should change?
Well, that's an issue for consideration. I mean, the job bridge was hitting that classic catch-22 that someone has come out of training but has never got any work experience, and no one wants to touch anyone that hasn't work experience. It was a bridge. I don't think it's that expensive. It's €50 on top of social welfare. But it is, they're suggesting that perhaps you should look at some targeting. I think that's something that will be examined. But it's a good programme. It's getting 60% progression into permanent work. So it is working well.
During the week, there was an announcement regarding the new local enterprise offices, which were launched around the country, replacing the old county enterprise boards. What was wrong with the old system?
Well, I think it was nothing that was wrong. The county enterprises were excellent, but we could do much better. I think the advantage of creating a centre of excellence within Enterprise Ireland, with service level agreements with each and every one of those offices, it allows innovation, it allows standards be improved, it allows new policy instruments be developed. You know, that is a great dynamo to drive enterprise creation in the regions. The other innovation is we're bringing the local authorities absolutely in as partners. And they're adding more staff, so it has greater reach, it has more policy opportunities, like planning can be supported in the local enterprise office. But then you have the tremendous reach of the local authority as well. You know, they have much space under the control. They control things like, you know, how rates are structured. You know, they have great influence. So to get the power of the local authority behind the task of employment creation is a great bonus. And it's central to our strategy. I mean, we need to roll out regional success. That's why we've the IDA Advance facilities being built, the regional aid map put in place, regional enterprise strategies to develop later in the year.
And so there are a lot of different things looking specifically at regions. You mentioned about the IDA. You're off on a trade mission tomorrow to Texas. Can we expect some job announcements in the coming days arising from that?
Well, I think, you know, clearly these meetings are about building for the future. I think we have a solid pipeline, and I think there will be investment coming out of this. I don't want to comment on how quickly we'll be
in a position.
No, well, I think there's two elements of this trade mission. It's the two sides. It's Irish companies going and winning new markets in oil and gas, in particular on this occasion. We've many innovative companies, you know, companies like Instant Upright, Combi Lift, lots of interesting who are playing into the oil and gas as an opportunity. You know, I'm sure the business will be done between Irish companies and US in the course of that mission, and hopefully some can be announced. The other then is there's 10 IDA visits where companies looking at Ireland as potential investment were meeting. Those tend to be building the pipeline for the future, and Barry O'Leary will be with me on this, you know, looking at making sure that we try to win the continued really good flow of foreign investment that we've enjoyed.
Okay.
But there's two strands to our strategy.
Well, thank you very much for coming in, Minister Richard Bruton.